In the early 1980s, I used to go to a comedy club called Catch a Rising Star, and that's where I discovered my favorite comedian, Gilbert Gottfried. Gilbert is known for many things. He's a former talk show host, actor, voiceover talent, currently heard, if not seen, as the Aflac Duck. But he's also a comedian's comedian, and he's one of the 100 or so comedians who give their version of the dirtiest joke of all time in the documentary The Aristocrats. Gilbert actually steals the movie with his appalling and hilarious version of the joke. It gives me great delight to welcome back to the Leonard Lopate Show, Gilbert Gottfried. Hi, Gilbert.
How exactly do you turn a shark over on its back?
Do you have any experience with turning over sharks?
No, but I like how, like, casually it says, well, if a shark attacks you, turn it over on its back.
I wondered about that myself. You notice, but some of the sharks are 6 inches long.
Then there's no fight to begin with.
That's like, right.
So basically, if you're in the middle of the ocean and a shark attacks you, plant your feet firmly on the ground, and then turn the shark over.
That's what I
and
think.
And they'll is, just let you do it.
Right. Well, so that's good. I mean, I think that's a... who knew? You came here, you got useful advice
exactly.
as well.
See, the best thing to do, put your hand inside the shark's mouth.
That's
or
right.
Better hold.
Exactly. Better grip. So, Gilbert, I have seen The Aristocrats. I hope everybody has seen The Aristocrats. And
I don't care one way or the other because I'm not getting a dime.
Right.
For
well,
it.
And isn't it true that none of you guys got paid for your involvement at all?
Penn Jillette asked over 100 comics to do this for free, making this his greatest magic trick.
That's right. And then you all did it, you pathetic suckers.
Shows what complete schmucks every comedian is.
And it's about now. Obviously, we were dealing with the delicate sensibilities of WNYC listeners, so we can't tell the whole joke, but it's a fairly simple joke, and each comedian does their version of the joke. Now, when did you first hear the joke, do you think?
I don't know. I think I heard it from a comic, and somebody told me the joke. I don't remember when I heard it, and that was it. And I'm the one who told it to Penn, so there.
Oh, is that true? Is that how he heard it?
He
didn't go way back and hear. He didn't have a long history with The Aristocrats?
No. I remember telling it to him in Las Vegas in a coffee shop.
And
he tries to make it like it's this deep, dark secret in show business. You know, say that line to a homeless man. He goes, come with me, comrade.
At least in the movie, they seem to say it's kind of an inside joke among comedians that it's not often told, perhaps for obvious reasons because it's so dirty, in public, that comedians kind of tell it to each other. Is that true?
Yeah, well, it hasn't been told that much on, like, the Perry Como show or anything like that.
I guess not.
Not during the Bing Crosby Christmas special did he ever say that joke.
But do you think you heard it when you started doing stand-up? I mean, basically from other comedians?
I heard it once from another comedian. That was really the extent of it.
And the whole, I mean, the whole movie is about how each comedian puts his or her, and obviously women sometimes do it quite differently than men, that their own stamp on the joke.
Yeah, it's one of those jokes where it's like the journey and not the destination.
Right.
That makes me sound
as several people point out in the movie, the joke in and of itself is pretty lame.
It's when you tell people a joke without the dirty words involved, they go, uh-huh.
That's right. I think many of the people who know this joke in the outside the comic world probably first heard it from you at the Comedy Central broadcast of the Hugh Hefner roast in 2001.
Yeah, this was like shortly after September 11th. It was September 11th, 1964, so I don't know what people were upset about.
Right.
But it was after it was after September 11th.
I mean, it was really only about 3 weeks after,
yeah.
I think, right.
And they were, it was when the whole country was going through that, well, nobody could ever sing or dance or tell jokes ever again.
Right.
It's all over. Smiling is forbidden. And I remember they were having the Emmy Awards, and they said, well, if we have the Emmy Awards, people are going to dress down. because so that means if
you know what?
I
think the victims probably felt better because of the, because people at the Emmys dressed down. Don't you think that was really a meaningful tribute to them?
If you lost a loved one in the World Trade Center, you go, "Hey, I'm so glad actresses aren't showing cleavage."
I know. I know many of them felt that.
We know he didn't die in vain. Now, that we're not seeing Pam Anderson's breasts,
that's true.
It's like we feel so much. So I went on, and I wanted to be the first one to start making 9/11 jokes. And
we all have our corner of history, and that was going to be yours.
Yes.
Right.
So, because there's always, like, at any given tragedy, there's, like, about five jokes that come out.
Well, I remember the challenge, where the space shuttle happily got back. But I remember in 1986, when the first space shuttle blew up, it seemed to me it was about 3 minutes until you
started hearing space challenger
jokes.
It was the same year as the Tylenol poisoning, and they said Tylenol and the Challenger, it's a bad year for capsules.
There you go. That's one of many.
And that woman astronaut,
Krista McAuliffe.
Yes, they said, what was her last word spoken on the Challenger? Oh, what's this button for?
Right, there you go. So you were with 9/11, right?
And I said, and this was, I followed Dick Gregory, who was talking about the tragedy of the World Trade Center. And I thought, and now Gilbert Gottfried. And first thing, I started doing a bunch of dirty jokes, and I said, well, tonight I'll be using my Muslim name, Hasan Bin Laden. And then I decided to go all out, and I said, I have to catch a plane to L.A. tonight, so I'm going to cut this short. I couldn't get a direct flight. We have to make a stop at the Empire State Building.
And there was this silence.
Yes. Yes. Chairs screeching back.
And people said, too soon, too soon.
I thought they meant I didn't take a long enough pause between the setup and the joke.
That's a true comics reaction.
Yes.
Right.
So then I launched into getting filthier and filthier, and the place just exploded.
Well, now, did you plan to tell the aristocrats that night?
No, I was just planning on being really dirty and filthy, so I guess it would have come along one way or the other.
But it was because it seemed like you sort of took the negative energy in the room and sort of went with it to get even more outrageous,
yes.
But at least on a different subject.
Yeah, and so I did it, and then I just it was an amazing reaction.
I mean, there were people there who were literally, I mean, almost passing out. They were laughing. They were laughing so hard they couldn't catch their breath. It was quite amazing. And it did seem to be almost a reaction to 9/11 in a way. Is that in lieu of, I mean, they had to laugh at something.
Yeah, and it seemed like So I guess it was therapeutic. And can I just go another step and say I think I'm the second coming of Christ. And,
well, that I agree. Wasn't that in your introduction?
Yes,
I believe
yes,
it was.
Yes, that was in the introduction.
That's right.
And in fact, that woman who shows police officers pictures showed a picture of the crucifixion, and most cops said he's okay, but he's no Gilbert Gottfried.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, that was part of the interview. I'm Jeffrey Toobin in for Leonard Lopate, talking with Gilbert Gottfried, the great comedian and star, I would have to say, the star of The Aristocrats, the great new documentary that's playing at many movie theaters, but not. What chain is it that refuses to?
Oh, I think the AMC.
AMC will not. And it is unrated.
Yes.
And I think the slogan, which is quite wonderful, and you can find out where it's playing at the website, thearistocrats.com. It's no sex, no violence, unspeakable obscenity.
Oh, yes.
And I think that's pretty accurate. Now, are you surprised by how much attention this movie has gotten?
When they first came to me with the idea, I thought, oh, well, it's nice that you have a hobby. I didn't see any way in hell this was going to hit a theater. And then when they said, well, we are getting a distribution, I thought, well, it'll be like one of those films that, like, Roger Ebert sees and talks about, but nobody else on the planet sees. It's like in some little art house. And in one part of the world. And now it's like breaking records.
Is it really? I mean, it seems to be doing very well. I actually, because I am such a a fan of yours and of that joke. I went the first day it opened, and it was in an afternoon performance. Don't tell my employers. And the place was pretty crowded for an afternoon show, and I thought that
right
that
now
had
they're
to be a
cleaning
good show.
Out your locker.
Exactly,
as we speak.
It's all yes. done. Is there such a thing as a joke that's like in bad taste? Is there anything you worry about that you don't do?
Obviously there are bad taste jokes. It doesn't stop me from doing them. And there's nothing really, no topic you can't make a joke about.
Do you really feel that way?
Oh yeah. Really? I mean, people can get offended by it, but there's any topic a joke can be made about.
Have you, I mean, you've performed all sorts of places for over the years. Have you ever had people with really negative reactions to either being dirty or being disrespectful of some group? I mean, do you ever get...
Oh yeah.
Well,
yeah,
what happens?
I'll get that. And it's funny, because for the most part, I usually work clean. And that's the odd part about the whole thing.
You do, actually. Clubs, you are fairly clean.
I remember years ago, I got in trouble on the Emmy Awards. Because it was right after Pee-wee Herman got arrested. And I said, if masturbation's a crime, I should be on death row.
Did they bleep that?
They bleeped it on the West Coast. They made public apologies. People were complaining. And the most insane part about it, I had reporters interviewing me. And each article was Dirty Mouth Comic, Gilbert Gottfried. And I said, I don't see myself as the new Lenny Bruce. And one reporter said, no, I don't see you as Lenny Bruce either. I mean, Lenny Bruce was funny, but he wasn't controversial. And I thought, okay.
not well-versed in the history.
Yeah, kind of like Fred Astaire was a good actor, but not really a dancer.
Not exactly. How many times would you say you've told The Aristocrats in your life?
God, I don't know. A few times.
Do you do it in your act regularly?
No. I think now it probably will wind up there because people will be chanting for it. Probably be like Liza Minnelli walking off doing a phony ending and then coming back. And the New York backdrop lights up and she sings New York, New York.
Yeah, you two look a little alike these days,
yes.
You and Liza.
And in fact, I'm going out with her old boyfriend.
Right, yes, lucky you.
Gigantic eyes and zombie face.
Right.
Yes.
You have had a peripatetic career. You've had an unusual...
I can't even pronounce that.
That's right. But I mean...
On this station.
Only on... It's NPR, so yes. We can say peripatetic. But you had the world's greatest cameo in Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Yes.
And you have... I mean, like, my kids, of course, know you as Iago in...
Aladdin. Yes.
And... Now you have the Affleck doc.
Yeah.
Now, in your act, do you now have to do the doc?
I have people in the audience, some people in the street that will yell out, Affleck! I also do the voice of a bird in this educational cartoon called Cyber Chase. So
Now, what is the bird thing? You play three prominent birds.
My career is for the birds.
That's the connection. But
yes.
You have no
spiritual
connection with birds.
Why? None. I wish I could come up with an answer for that, and it would make me sound really deep.
Right. Yes,
but my career is walking the tightrope between early morning children's programming and hardcore porn.
I see. Now, one of the things I always wondered about. About Iago, you're playing Iago, and Robin Williams is in the movie. I mean, you have these great comedians. How much of that was improvised? Because it certainly sounds like you're riffing when you're in the movie, and then they would put the animation in. But was any of it improvised?
Yeah, there was a lot of improv going on, and because you know you record it first, and then they animate around it.
And so you do. I would think you would have to, because it's certainly, having seen your stand act epic, it sounds like you're improvising.
Yeah, I would throw stuff in, and every now and then they'd stop me and go, "This is a Disney film." I go, "Oh, yes, sorry."
And the Affleck duck is quite really a remarkable phenomenon.
They called me in.
Well, how did that happen?
I actually had to audition for it.
Were you competing against others, do you think?
Yes. The guy told me there were like major names competing for that. I guess I was sitting there with Liam Neeson.
That's right.
And he's there going, I'll try it again. Affleck, you know. And so I yelled Affleck a few times into a microphone. I left there thinking, boy, I need a new agent. And this is a total waste of time today. This is like such a stupid campaign. It'll never work.
And how many years ago was that?
That was a number of years ago. So never ask me for advice on anything.
I see. So yes. This is Jeffrey Toobin and for Leonard Lope talking with the great Gilbert Gottfried.
Gottfried.
Yes.
Well, that's for all our friends in Chinatown.
Exactly.
The great Gottfried. Oh, Mr. Gottfried. Very honored to meet Mr. Gottfried.
But don't eat shark fin soup, as we
yes,
know.
Yes, but no, that's...
Because we heard the sharks.
Sharks give you an erection, I heard.
Yes, that is true.
Not even eating them, just watching them. they've always given me an erection.
Talking about the aristocrats and the Affleck duck. Now, when you do the Affleck duck, do you tape anything except the word Affleck? There are occasionally other words you utter.
Yes. Occasional curse words, occasional thing. No, I'll go in. This is like live in the actor's studio.
That's true.
Yes.
So tell us about, yes. You get in character as the duck, right?
And
do you research the part?
The world changed as Gilbert Gottfried brought out the Affleck duck. there's me yelling Affleck. Occasionally there's a frustrated sound like, eh!
Right, yes,
yeah.
I've seen that.
See, it's very, and this is why, like people like Harrison Ford never quite got the nuances.
Right, that's right, you have...
Yeah, Meryl Streep tried and failed miserably.
So, Gilbert, you're a New Yorker, right?
I'm afraid so.
You'd never guess from listening to you.
It's
a total shock to me.
You would think, this guy's from Dublin.
Right.
Yes.
Now, where did you grow up in the city?
In Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn, which is part of New York City. And when did you start doing comedy? Were you the obnoxious kid in school?
I'm the obnoxious kid, obnoxious teenager.
Right.
Now I'm the obnoxious adult. I started doing it first time I walked up on stage. I was like 15, which shows how strong they follow these laws against letting underage people into drinking establishments.
And were you any good at the beginning?
See, that's the thing. I don't know if I was any good or if I was too stupid to know how bad I was.
And what would you do? I mean, would you just show up? I mean, there were places. Catch or
no? Even before Catch, it was like I think it was at the bitter end when they'd have what was called Hootenanny Night.
Hootenanny, wow!
Yeah,
you're kind of a country and western kind of guy.
Oh yes, it was like an open mic night.
Right,
they call it open mic night to get free entertainment. Now with the aristocrats and stuff like that, it's called a labor of love. Yeah, it's always named.
But the paycheck is the same
exactly.
For you. Yeah. And so you do open mic night at the bitter end.
And I was doing that for a number of years, and then I was like finding other places where also I'd have the honor of working for free.
And when did you get your first paying gig?
I was starting to get work in, like, I don't remember when it was but I was starting to get work in other clubs and stuff, and then as far as TV, I started to get work here and there.
And the rest is history. Well, yeah. We're going to need to go to a break.
Oh, wait. Before we go to
please,
a break,
we'll go, yes.
I just want to say, before I forget, I finished a DVD called Gilbert Gottfried Dirty Jokes. And you could find out about that on www.gilbertgottfried.com.
See, we knew him when. Now he's got his very own website, his own DVD. Jeffrey Toobin with Gilbert Gottfried. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. This is Jeffrey Toobin in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm talking with the Gilbert Gottfried on WNYC 93.9 AM 820 and WNYC.org. So, Gilbert, you got a DVD.
Yes.
The World's Greatest Dirty Jokes.
No, it's called Gilbert Gottfried Dirty Jokes. It's an imaginative title.
It's very good. Now, tell us, what is on the DVD? Is it nothing but you telling dirty jokes?
Yeah, there's not like one joke I could tell on the air.
I was going to say. Because as you say, your act is not particularly dirty.
See, my act is not dirty, but every now and then I've been in situations where I've gotten... I one time opened for Belinda Carlisle. And the guy told me beforehand, he says, look, there's a lot of, like, little girls and their mothers in the audience, and so you gotta work clean. And I tried that for about 5 minutes and then did about every dirty joke
with the kids in the audience.
Yes.
And what happened then?
They basically called my agent with the classic line, let's just start out by saying we all love Gilbert here. That's when you know you've been fired. When they say they love you, it's like going on a date with a girl and having her say, first, let me tell you, I think you're a great guy. Yeah, it's like, okay, now you can go home. Yeah.
And I don't know how to say this politely. You have a distinctive voice. I'm probably the first person who's ever told you that.
Yes. I've never heard this before. Yes.
But now, is this something you developed or worked on, or you always had this distinctive voice?
Most people think I have very soothing tones.
Is that true?
Yes. Yeah. Most people like to put their children to sleep hearing my voice.
In fact, the DVD, I believe, will be used mostly for putting young children
exactly.
to sleep. Yes.
And it's on www.gilbertgottfried.com.
We never turn away from a plug on Leonard Lopate Show.
And where the hell is Lenny Lopez?
Well, you know,
I came here to talk to Lenny Lopez.
I know.
What the hell did they pull on me?
Sloppy seconds for you. Look at this.
Now,
we were even bringing you a Diet Coke. You're
yes.
being served a Diet Coke. In fact, the last time you were here, I understand that they spilled water on you.
Yeah.
Remember this?
And then they, like, whacked. Then she took her shoe off and whacked me over the head with it.
Unbelievable.
And I was fed rat poison.
It was great. It's your membership dollars at WNYC at work. So did you ever think about changing your voice to a more normal kind of sound?
Yes. I wanted to have one of those voices that they have on, like, radio at 4 in the morning.
Right, yeah. But you just never...
Like the ones who do the... who work on the opera station.
Yes. Did you ever have, a normal job?
Yes, I've had several normal jobs.
What did you do?
I used to be a heart surgeon.
Is that true?
That didn't work out. I used to have a habit of giggling and dropping things.
Oh, terrible. That was bad. But no, seriously, did you ever have a job, or could you really
One job. This is my favorite of these awful jobs I've had. It was a company that used to, you would buy burglar kits from them, anti-burglary kits from them. And it was a home emergency, alarm systems for your home. And one of the things that they had in the kit was a metal pencil that you can carve your number into, the number, so they could track your items if they're stolen. So they would sit me there with a box of metal pencils and a glass ashtray. Now, I would, scrape the ashtray. If it scraped it, I'd put it in the good pile. If it didn't scrape it, I'd put it in the bad pile. And on the cover of these alarm systems, it said, tested by skilled craftsmen.
And that was and to think you gave that up for show business.
Yes, surprisingly.
What do you consider yourself, mostly a stand-up comedian, or mostly an actor, or mostly whatever work you get, or is it?
The audience considers me neither.
I see,
but that's a whole other story. I don't know. It's like I've always said. I go wherever they wave a check in my face.
Now, where do you work stand-up these days?
All over the place. It's like like, actually, tomorrow...
You have something? Yeah, come on, let's do some plugs
yeah,
here.
Yeah, tomorrow I'm going to Cleveland.
Are you really?
Yeah. And I forget the name.
Okay, well, that's all right. We're probably not...
Look around and... I know this station's very big.
Very big, very big in Cleveland, so I wouldn't worry about it.
And then I'm working Alaska, so you could plug it there.
That's good too. Do you worry about what the audience is? Do you check out an audience first before you work, or do you just do your act regardless?
Girls, yes.
Old drunken men, you don't care?
Yes. And it's usually little girls sitting with old drunken men.
Right,
so
yes.
That's my audience.
But you don't really worry about who the audience is.
No, I don't spend a lot of time. I don't try to second guess it.
When I saw you at Catch, I mean, one of the things about being at Catch a Rising Star in the 80s, and it was a pretty hot time for stand-up comedy, and I should say I'm Jeffrey Toobin in today for Leonard Lopate, talking with Gilbert Gottfried.
And now the whole thing's going, damn it, we wanted to heal anyone.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, they've been dealing with that for an hour and 50 minutes now, you know, so if they're not happy now, the hell with them. hecklers were sort of part of the deal. Do you have a technique for dealing with hecklers?
I throw something at them. I attack them with the mic stand.
Right.
I usually was not, because you know a lot of these people say, you know you get these things where you really put the heckler in his place. But most hecklers, like, they feel like if you've insulted them, they're part of the show now.
they're part of the act.
You go like, hey, you're an idiot. Yeah, you have sex with farm animals. It's like, and they hear a laugh and think, hey, I'm doing good.
That's right. My act is working.
Yes.
When you did, just getting back to The Aristocrats, I mean, you've now seen the movie. What struck you about the movie that you hadn't realized about the joke? Was there anything in particular that struck? Because there, I mean, what's amazing about the movie is how differently people tell it, and some are better than others, but some of them are really incredibly inventive and great. No, you don't buy that?
No,
you didn't think it was
no,
any good?
I just think I'm great.
No, you are.
Yes.
Okay. I
watch the movie. Whenever I'm in a movie, I look at my shoes, and when I hear my voice, I look up.
You
immediately.
Pick up.
Yeah, everyone tells it a different way. And it is. It's like, you know, people compare it to jazz. And Penn said in one interview, he said, I was like the Miles Davis of comedy. And I always say I think Miles Davis is a lot funnier than me.
he was a riot. I guess there is nothing that kills humor faster than analyzing it.
It's basically like cutting a frog apart. And then saying, okay, now we see how it jumps. Now, jump! And it that just kills it right then and there.
You told a joke in your act that I remember. The punchline involves a Yiddish word, a bissel and a
yes, it's such a long bit.
It's a long bit, I know. It's not particular. But I remember you, after the joke, which gets a great laugh, you go, that kills them in Wyoming.
Oh, yes.
They're screaming, make an obscure Jewish reference.
Yeah, people are screaming out, please read something from the Talmud.
and do you find your act plays differently in front of, like, in areas where there might not be as many Jews?
That's a funny thing, because I one time played in Carolina. That was a place that was like a few doors down from, I think they said, the headquarters of the Klan. And I did.
It wasn't a convention.
Yeah,
right? No,
I did very well there.
They like that.
So I guess that's my audience.
That's a yes. But you are not tempted. I mean, you still live in New York.
Yes.
But you know, you're a big Hollywood star now. Ever tempted to go out to L.A. like Johnny Carson?
I should, but I'm an idiot.
Is that?
I was thinking of going visiting Johnny, but it's a little late.
it's a little late.
Yeah.
When you I'm just killing you with The Aristocrats. You didn't think it was any good? Is that what you're saying? You didn't think it was funny?
Yeah, they brought it. They said it to me, and I thought, God, what an idiotic idea this is. Much like I thought with the Aflac commercials. So I know.
That shows what judgment you have.
Yeah. And then when it started taking off like this, it like, as far as independent films, it, like, way surpassed, like, the Blair Witch Project.
Is that right?
Yeah. Really?
It's going to open in more theaters?
Yeah.
So you can check it out at www.thearistocrats.com. When you get finished at GilbertGottfried.com, buying multiple copies of
Gilbert Gottfried's Dirty Jokes.
Gilbert Gottfried's Dirty Jokes. So do you have any movie dramatic roles in the offing? What is...
I'm in
you?
That remake in Schindler's List. I'm doing the lead.
That's right.
And I was in Passion of the Christ. I'm
what
listed
did you play?
In the credits as third Jew to the left. So,
but now, did you do the Aladdin sequel too?
Yeah, I was in all. Yeah, there was like Return of Jafar, direct to video, and then there was Aladdin and the King of Thieves. There was the series.
You're milking
series.
That baby. That's
yeah.
A beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Iago's been very good to you.
Yes, I just do very well with birds.
It is this bird thing. Now, do you worry about the Affleck duck? Affleck deciding to go to a different campaign.
I'm always scared that one day Affleck's going to wake up and go, "Hey, we can just hire an actual duck." Yeah,
that's a big problem. At the risk of profundity, do you have any
thoughts?
Profundity. I know, we're doing a whole NPR thing
yes.
here. We're doing a whole, like, lexicon of NPR words. Do you think jokes have any purpose other than to make people laugh?
I'm one of those people that doesn't really put that much importance on jokes. I think it's mainly to make people laugh. Other people think, oh, this guy's jokes changed the world.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing about what's so interesting in The Aristocrats about your joke at the Hugh Hefner roast, where it was more than just the joke. It was sort of people laughing for the first time since 9/11.
Yeah, that was an amazing time because it did seem like
Were you nervous about going on? I mean, backstage, a Comedy Central roast, a Friars roast, is a, it's supposed to be funny. Did they worry about doing it at all 3 weeks after?
Yeah, there was, because there were a lot of shows being canceled around the time. I remember I was supposed to do a big party at Disney, and they, like, postponed it. And so it seemed like this may have... I don't know if there was talk about this being canceled. And there was also, like, everybody... There was that dour mood around the country. And also, I was going on last, which is, like the toughest thing, because...
But because they expect you to be the best.
Yeah. And also, everyone's heard every single joke already. And the roast on TV have been cut down tremendously. When you're actually sitting there filming them, they're about, like... 10 years long.
They are very long,
yeah.
and they cut it down, I think, just to an hour.
Oh yeah,
and they have to set up. It's a tough, and it's also a show business crowd. They're a pretty tough crowd, right?
Oh yeah, that's always like the worst audience you could get.
Other comics
or just industry audiences.
That's why the Academy Awards are often tough, because those people aren't there to laugh.
Yeah, that's why I've never hosted.
That's
the
right.
Academy
I understand that you're always asked to host the Oscars, and you say, you know, it's just not my crowd.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you know, it's a billion people watching, but you know, I just don't feel comfortable.
Yes,
with that kind of group.
And plus, I'm working Snickers in Illinois, so I really don't have the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, you are also on the Hollywood Squares.
Yes.
You're not in the prestigious Center Square.
Never. Never made the Center Square.
Never made the Center Square. You know, I come from a generation, as I suspect you did, that I associate that with Paul Lynde.
Yes.
Forever. Now, Paul
Lynde...
So,
basically, you're saying I'm an old,
you're
drunken
an old,
homosexual.
Old,
yes. Okay. Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
And now, what... Do you consider yourself influenced by any comics? I mean, are there people you looked up to as a young comic? Because you're pretty different from most other people. But...
There's a lot of comics I've looked up to, although I always think when you say influence, it sounds like a nice way of saying plagiarized.
Stolen from,
yes.
Milton Berle problem, yes.
It's funny because you said about Hollywood Squares, it's like, I remember watching that show as a kid and thinking, oh, God, what pathetic losers coming on Hollywood Squares. Oh, boy.
Yeah. And now has your view changed? Or is now is that pretty much the group that you do?
Yeah, well, now that I've been on it, people know it's from pathetic losers.
But no, seriously, who did you look up to as a young comic, now that you are, I would say, an old comic? No, I'm just kidding.
Yes.
No, really, who did you look up to?
God, lots of people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Name a couple.
I mean, there were like the really old comics that I'd see on TV, kind of when they'd still show old movies, like the Marx Brothers. And, well, I was a Jerry Lewis fan. Lots of people. Jack Benny.
Well, and one of the things that's fun about the Aristocrats is you see Don Rickles and Phyllis Diller and Pat Cooper.
Yeah, Larry Storch.
Larry Storch. I was only in the credits that I realized that was Larry Storch. You know, for those of us who are formative influence, was F Troop.
Yes.
That you know, it was great to see Larry. But how about of your generation? Who do you think of as sort of your peer group?
You mean people that I worked with?
You worked with in comics.
There were a lot of people in the clubs when I was working there. I mean, there was like Jerry Seinfeld and Paul Reiser and Bill Maher and a lot of people like that.
And they are none of them
yes.
as funny as you.
Yeah, none of them.
None of them.
Not
they
one.
Can't not fit to tie, shine your shoes. Anyway, we are out of time. I am Jeffrey Toobin sitting in for Leonard Lopate, who had the great privilege of interviewing the great Gilbert Gottfried.
But I had to be stuck here with someone other than Lenny Lope. What's going on here?
I think it's
Who do I complain to?
A reflection of your status in the show business universe.
Yes.
You don't get Lenny. That's just the sad truth.
That'll be my autobiography. I don't get Lenny.
Jeffrey Toobin of The New Yorker and CNN. Lenny will be, and Philip Garabich will be back tomorrow on WNYC 93.9, AM 820, and WNYC.org. So long. Tomorrow, my pal Philip Garabich will be sitting in for Leonard. So join him to hear about prospects for peace in Sri Lanka in the wake of the tsunami. He'll also talk to the director of Darwin's Nightmare, a new documentary that's getting a lot of attention for its very bleak take on globalization. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Melissa Egan, Maureen McMurray, Sarah English, and Brenna Farrell, with help today from Zoe Arnold, Lizzie May, and Isha Sabatini-Sloan. I'm Jeffrey Toobin of CNN and The New Yorker, in today for Leonard Lopate. Thanks for listening, and stay cool.